Get Up is brought to you by Disney's new movie, Mulan. Experience the legend of Mulan as she fights to defend her family and the kingdom. Streaming Friday, available to Disney Plus subscribers who unlock premiere access. We're back on Get Up here, and as we continue, did you see this moment yesterday with Fred VanVleet and his kids? Take a look.
Daddy! Daddy! Who's that?
I love you, Daddy.
Oh, so sweet.
And that went viral yesterday, and it's so good. And Richard Jefferson joins me this morning. We'll get into the basketball here. And, you know, the players have been sequestered. They've been in this bubble away from their families who went through this quarantine, and now they've all been reunited. And Richard, that's about as good a moment as it gets, yes?
Who's that?
So health and Paul George and, you know, him opening up the discussion about not really, you know, being in great places. These are the type of things that help players getting back to their families, remembering why they're out there fighting, like, for their families, to represent themselves. And so to see this moment, that's a special moment, and I'm happy for him. I'm happy for all the players that got their families and loved ones next to him now.
Me too. And that obviously is the real point to be made here. But Richard, and because you are a smart aleck, you will appreciate this. How funny is Charles Barkley, if you were watching this last night on Turner, when they showed that, right? Everyone's reaction, RJ, is that this is a beautiful moment. And then Charles Barkley chimes in with, if they don't start playing better, they can all go home this weekend, which I thought was extraordinarily funny and extraordinarily Charles Barkley. And Richard, seems like something you would have said.
It's something that I have thought many times over, but I kind of felt bad because I felt like some of these guys I still know personally, so I didn't want to crack any of those jokes. But there are teams that are facing game sevens and don't have whose families might not be there very long.
That's exactly right. All right, Richard, well done. Again, it's a beautiful moment, and it should have been treated that way, and only Charles Barkley could get away with saying what he said. All right, with that, we welcome you back to another hour of Get Up. I'm Greeny in Bristol. We're going to be jam-packed here, and it is going to start with the basketball. Let's get up with double trouble in the bubble. Are we on the verge of a stunning collapse? What would it mean if this duo loses in round one? We will start there. Then, should any player ever not do what he does best? It's a great question. The reigning MVP's at the center of it. We've got the answers. And hold everything. Did you hear what Bill said about his new quarterback? If you didn't, you will and you won't believe your ears in this hour of Get Up, which starts right now with our game of the night. Game 6, Thunder, Rockets, OKC, with Westbrook back, looking to put away that man, Chris Paul, the former Rocket. Here's James Harden, looking to move on to round two. Pick it up, close game, fourth quarter. Rockets up 2, Rockets up 5. Harden drills it, he would score 32. Under 4 to play, though. CP3 would take the game over. Drills the 3, they're within 3. Next possession, Paul, guarded by Robert Covington. Oh, you can't stop this! And he's letting them know it. 28 points, 0 turnovers. For Chris Paul, we're tied at 98. Under 15 seconds to go. Tied at 100. Paul in the lane. Gets the foul. Goes to the line with a chance to give the Thunder the lead. Knocks down the first. Here comes the second. Thunder, a 2-point lead. 13 seconds to go. What will Houston draw up? Here comes Westbrook. There goes Westbrook. Oh, is he throwing it? Robert Covington didn't see it coming, can't hang on, and out of bounds it goes. That would be all she wrote. Westbrook turned it over 7 times. Thunder force a game 7. Chris Paul, the hero. OKC has life. Richard Jefferson and Tim Legler are with me this morning. And RJ, we will start with you because it feels to me, in a way, like everything in the world is at stake now for the Rockets in a game 7. They put this thing together with a small ball and a chance to make a run here. The coach hangs in the balance. James Harden, we know about the playoff history. Feels like there is a lot at stake as this team faces a first round game 7.
No, there is a lot at stake, but understand when you're talking about, you know, the Houston Rockets and you're talking about some of these top tier teams, there's always a ton of stuff at stake. But yes, is D'Antoni, you know, on the hot seat? They still have two of the best players in the NBA, regardless of what happens in game 7. But I think this game 7 is going to be huge. One thing we did know, you did not want to get into a last 2-3 minute game with Oklahoma City because they have the best record in close games coming down the stretch.
I get that. And yet, at the same time, Tim Legler, you would think that a team that has James Harden, who is probably the most unstoppable one-on-one player in the sport, and Russell Westbrook would be very comfortable in these late close games. They always find a bucket, and yet they're not the team that can do that. What does that say?
Yeah, look, I do trust a guy like Chris Paul, the brains of the operation, and a guy in that situation to make sure that his team gets the shot that they want. The problem with Russell Westbrook in these situations, and you saw it again last night, he wants to do everything with speed. And that's not the time you want to use speed to your advantage. You want to be able to process the defense and see what's in front of you. You know, he puts his head down and just goes. He finds himself in traffic, and now he throws this off-balance pass to Robert Covington, who wasn't expecting it, and it goes out of bounds. And that looked like a Russell Westbrook play at the end of a game. I don't know why the ball wasn't in James Harden's hands when they drew that up coming out of that timeout during the challenge. But to me, that ball has to be in Harden's hands because he's got a better handle, he's a better shooter, and he's a better finisher. So I don't know what they were trying to accomplish there, but I don't really trust them to close out a game as much as I will trust a guy like Chris Paul to make sure his team gets the shot they want. So if this thing goes down a one possession game in a game seven, I think Oklahoma City has the advantage.
All right, that would be really something. If this team, the small ball team with the superstars, goes out in round one, that would really be a big surprise. Meanwhile, how big a surprise would it be if Miami takes out Milwaukee? If that one was the game of the night, this was the performance of the night. Jimmy Butler, spectacular game one in this second round series. Second half, third quarter, Heat down three, not anymore. Jimmy Butler doing it from everywhere, doing it from outside. Now watch him take it inside. Jimmy Butler, where's the defense? Oh, we're tied. Next Heat possession. They're down three. Butler says, not for long. He would score 12 straight points in the third. Heat would take a 6-point lead going to the fourth. And in that fourth quarter, Giannis really struggling. Bucks down a deuce. Working hard inside is the Greek Freak. Watch the pivot foot. They called a walk. They called a travel on a superstar in the NBA. Later in the fourth, 5.5 to go. Bucks down one. Giannis, oh, that's not close. He was 1 of 4 from the floor with 3 turnovers in the fourth quarter. 3 minutes to go. Heat up 3. Jimmy Butler. Oh, it's a 6-point lead. Oh, he was spectacular. He would score 40. He's the third Miami player ever with a 40-point playoff performance. You can probably guess the others. That's right. LeBron and D-Wade. In this case, Miami takes a 1-game-to-none lead behind a huge night from Jimmy Butler, an 11-point win. Question is pretty simple. Richard Jefferson, Milwaukee, best team in basketball basically the entire year. Are they in trouble?
No, I don't think they're in trouble. I think Milwaukee is going to rev up. What their hope is that, you know, Miami slows down a little bit. You have those young shooters. They're playing great. Jay Crowder's playing great. You start to see why they brought in Andre Iguodala and gave him the contract that they did. He's able to facilitate. He's able to guard Giannis and potentially guard more perimeter guys if you look at who they would potentially have to play in the later rounds. So I think Milwaukee is going to get better. But ultimately, this was a little strange to me. You know, Giannis questioned why when somebody asked him if he thought about guarding Jimmy Butler, and he questioned, like, why would you ask that question? The reason why they asked that question is because you are the defensive player of the year. You can slow down people. You can stop people. But he was a little, you know, caught, I don't want to say caught off guard, but a little defensive about that question, which I thought was a legit one.
Okay, I like that part of it. Let's also go to the Milwaukee offense, Tim, because we watched when they lost to Toronto last year, they looked like they just didn't know where they wanted to go for a bucket because there were things about Giannis that you can take away if you put your whole defense into doing that. How do they solve that problem in time to win this series?
It's going to be tough because there are limitations in his game, Greeny. But I think if I'm the Milwaukee Bucks, when I like Giannis the best in a half-court situation, particularly, you know, when it's tight, I don't like him necessarily initiating the offense with a dribble coming out of the backcourt. And you saw that three that he took, you know, 13 seconds left on the clock, and nobody else really touches the ball. That's not his shot. That's playing into the hands of what the defense wants you to do. I love when he sets the first screen at the top of the key, and he is the dive guy. Because he's got one of the best set of hands in the league. He's then one of the most powerful guys going toward the rim, or maybe you hit him in the lane, or you get a collapse of the defense, and now you've got a couple three-point shooters on the perimeter. The fact that he's a straight-line dribble guy going to his right hand primarily, and you know that's where he wants to get, if you can load up bodies in front of him, he's not really clever with the ball to change directions and escape. He's not going to necessarily beat you with his passing. It's a hole in his game, and it's a very difficult way to close games for them. And you converse it with what Jimmy Butler did. He had four different baskets in four different ways going in both directions, including a pull-up three, because he doesn't have those holes in his game. I think the Bucks can win close games, but I don't necessarily like Giannis initiating the offense with a live dribble. I think he's better off starting off with a screen and a dive, or maybe get him something in the post.
I stay close by. We'll do much more hoops as we continue in this hour, Richard. And then I want to mention today's poll question as well as up on my Twitter page. This came from an idea that Kendrick Perkins put together. What do you think is the NBA's best duo since Kobe and Shaq? Is it LeBron and AD right now? Here are the other options. Go to my Twitter page at ESPN Grady. Cast your vote. We'll talk about it on the radio this afternoon as well. Meanwhile, back to the NFL. Lamar Jackson set the world on fire and set the quarterback rushing record last year, totaling more than 1,200 yards. But for the second straight year, as you know, his team went home without a playoff win. Ravens offensive coordinator Greg Roman talking about running this year.
I think we'll all have to wait and find out. But I think it's something that we can do. And, you know, obviously Lamar's skill set and dynamic athletic ability, that's just something that we can have available every week, do a little bit more of it this week, a little less of it the next week. I think it's also an in-game feel for how the game's going, you know, how the defense is playing. It's something that we can definitely hang our hat on at times, and other times we won't.
So he's talking about designed rushes, and I think that's a critical distinction. A lot of quarterbacks will tuck it and run. They're calling running plays. In each of the last 2 years, he has set the highest mark for designated rushes by a quarterback in a single season. Take a look at those numbers. The previous two coming from Cam, one of them was an MVP season. But these are huge numbers, and that doesn't take into account the instances where he doesn't have a receiver down the field, tucks it and runs. Marcus Spears joins the conversation this morning along with Greg and Jeff. And Swagoo, I will come to you because I've heard people ask this question. I'll ask it to you. Should the Ravens call fewer running plays for their quarterback?
Yes, G, absolutely. They should. You know, you go through weeks of getting prepared for games and you create, obviously, your game plan and you figure out what's best to take advantage of a defense. And I know as a defensive guy, speaking from if I'm facing a week with Lamar Jackson, the Ravens don't want to take away the idea that these design runs and run plays will be pulled out of what they are doing offensively, because it gives defensive coordinators and defensive players nightmares when you're trying to get prepared for that week. But obviously you want to protect him. You don't want him in harm's way as much as possible, and you want him to throw from the pocket. Lamar is a good quarterback, though. Like, we talk about the running aspect of the game, and Greg Roman obviously knows he has an elite skill set as far as getting out and making plays with his legs. But for the most part, as an OC and as a team, you want Lamar healthy, and possibly the healthiest is standing in the pocket and not creating those design runs.
Jeff, what do you think?
Couldn't disagree more with Swagoo. Man, like, you want his the best part of his game is you have no idea which way he's going to score on you. Is he going to take it 75 yards running it? Is he going to throw it with play action over the top of you and let one of his big tight ends or receivers go make a play? Is he going to turn it? That's what makes him so exceptional, is he can do it all. There's no one in the game that's like him, and it is very difficult to prepare for a guy like that. So what we're going to do is we're going to make a guy mediocre so we're better in 5 years. I don't care about 5 years. I want to win now. You have the team to win now. Lamar Jackson gives you the best chance to win by not limiting what you're asking him to do. Let that man go. That man scares everybody, right? Like, you literally turn the TV on just to watch him as a player because he can do it all. We haven't seen a guy be able to do it like this. I do not want to hinder him even in the slightest.
Marcus.
Jeff Saturday, you playing center, and Peyton Manning your quarterback, and he take off and run and get his head knocked in. What are you going to tell Peyton if he gets up off the floor? You going to tell him, hey, man, stay back here, let us protect you. I get all of that what you're saying. I 100% understand where you're coming from. But you know it's a ticking time clock on quarterbacks that's getting out there in them secondaries against them linebackers. Matter of fact, they got a guy that's second on their roster right now in Robert Griffin III, who Haloti Ngata almost ended his career based on and run because they wanted to do that in Washington. Look, I'm not saying you don't run Lamar Jackson. That is not my point. My point is you want Lamar Jackson to operate more from the pocket where he's more protected, handing that thing off to Ingram and J.K. Dobbins, who's back there now, as opposed to creating these design runs as much as you did last year. Because every team in the league is going to be trying to stop Lamar Jackson from running. And you know what that's going to mean? We going to take our shots at getting Lamar Jackson on the ground. That's my point. So keep the design runs. Keep doing all of that. Just make sure you don't do them too much, because if you lose him, you ain't got to worry about the next 5 years. You got to worry about a job.
I will also make the point that watching Peyton Manning take off and run and watching Lamar Jackson exactly. take off and run might be the two most different experiences a football fan has ever had.
The value.
But I
the
understood.
Value. The analogy is the value to the team. The analogy is the value to the team.
We all understood, and yet it was still funny. Greg McElroy, yeah. Your thoughts.
Stop, G.
If you take away Lamar Jackson's ability to run, then he becomes just like every other average quarterback in the league. What makes him so unique and what makes him so remarkably special is that every time, Spears, he takes off, you lose another hair. Or your hair turns gray if you're a defensive coordinator, whatever it may be, because the guy cannot be simulated. Who are you going to put at quarterback and scout team in the week leading up to the game against the Ravens? Who are you going to put back there? Because no one can do it like Lamar. He is unique to the quarterback position with what he can create with his legs. Will the time come when he's a more developed, polished passer? Sure, I really believe that day is coming, but that day is not today, because right now, historically speaking, Spears, every time a play involves Lamar Jackson, they average 7.5 yards, whether it's through the air or on the ground. And for historical perspective, that's more than the greatest show on turf, which is mostly known as the best offense of all time.
I got to leave it there for the second. But, Marcus, all that heavy breathing suggests to me that you want to be able to comment again, and we will. We will come back to this, I promise. I'll cancel anything and get back to this conversation, because I have multiple questions I still want to ask. We'll do that, and we'll do this. Bill Belichick, wait till you hear what he's saying about Cam Newton. I'd love to see Tom Brady's reaction to this. And then, the Jaguars did not want Leonard Fournette anymore. Did they wind up doing him a huge favor? We'll ask Swagoo that question and many more. We're just getting rolling. Let's get up on ESPN. We are back on Get Up, and we were just discussing this moments ago. Lamar Jackson, who set the quarterback rushing record last year with more than 1,200 yards, and for the second straight year, his team does not win a playoff game, has led to a lot of conversation about whether they should be calling fewer designed runs in Baltimore. And as I want to come back to Marcus here just really quickly before we get to other business, because we had a pretty good debate about this, and I could tell, Marcus, that you were strongly of the opinion that they need to call fewer designed runs. My question to you is this. Is your thinking that you want to preserve his health long term, or is your thinking that you believe ultimately they have a better chance of winning a championship by developing him further in the pocket and using him less as a runner?
One, preserve him as a player, G. But yes, I think you got more of a chance winning a championship when Lamar starts to develop as an elite pocket passer. That's not taking away his ability to run. That's not taking away design runs. I don't want to be misunderstood that he needs to transition into a guy that's just going to stand there throughout the duration of the game. But for as much as they ran Lamar last year, they need to make sure that they could cut those numbers down. Still be highly effective. He's going to be effective when he gets out with his legs, but make sure you continue to develop him from the pocket. Because last I checked, most of the guys that's winning Super Bowls have won it in the pocket and throwing with their arms, if I'm not mistaken.
No, that's true. It's always been done that way. That's why he's trying to do it his own way, and we'll see if he's able to do it. Let's see what they wind up doing. Meanwhile, something I know you really wanted to get into today, and I'm really looking forward to this. We spent almost all of our show yesterday morning talking about the legendary John Thompson, who we lost at the age of 78. The legend from Georgetown won the 84 national championship, made 3 Final Fours. He's in the Hall of Fame, and his cultural impact, I think, was even greater than his impact as a coach, and that himself put him in the Hall of Fame. But you had a personal connection to John Thompson you were telling me about yesterday that fascinated me. Go ahead, Swagoo.
Yeah, G, when I was young, I played for a team in Baton Rouge called the Mayfair Hoyas. And our idols were the Georgetown Hoyas. And it was our identification of a black coach in college basketball. And I was, you know how much I love hoops and playing the game and being able to play it at a high level throughout high school. Coach T sent me a letter. His son Ronnie recruited me at Georgetown. I was offered a full ride to go play basketball there. And I just remember feeling that feeling of just super proudness that the team that I had followed and watched growing up had saw fit to offer me a scholarship. But I also remember talking to Coach T, as I called him, John Thompson, one time. He said, "Big fella, I know you're a football player, but man, we'd love to have you at Georgetown playing basketball." And that really was the culmination of my basketball career when I started to think about how much that meant to me to have him say that and knowing the guys that had came through his program and the impact that he had on them as young men. So it was a... that story is always personal to me. He was somebody I looked up to. He was somebody that I wanted to emulate. And I played for the Mayfair Hoyas as a little kid, but I wanted to be a Georgetown Hoya for a long time as a basketball player growing up.
That's a remarkable story. Again, we've talked a lot about how great a basketball player Marcus was. I didn't know until yesterday that John Thompson offered you a scholarship. Meanwhile, our Dan Graziano also has a personal story about John Thompson to share, as you, of course, Dan, of course, is not the right way to put it, but you went to Georgetown while he was the coach there.
Yeah, class of 94, not exactly a golden age of Hoya basketball, but, you know, I was covering, it was still the top beat at the school newspaper, the Hoya. Imagine, you know, John Thompson news conferences were not always very warm and fuzzy, so imagine you're the 20, 21-year-old reporter there from the college paper with no training. Every question I asked was kind of the dumbest one he'd ever heard. So I ran into him years later at an NCAA tournament game, reintroduced myself, and I said, you know, I told him that story about covering, you know, for the school paper. He said, you know, in his big, deep voice, he said, "I bet I abused you." And I said, "Yeah, you did." I said, "But it got me ready, right?" Because I end up covering guys like Don Shula and Jim Leland and Joe Torre and Tom Coughlin, you know, like larger-than-life kind of coaching figures, and the experience there was good. But I just remember the, you know, Marcus talks about impact on young men's lives. You know, the story about the partially deflated basketball in his office where, like, when one of his players asked him about that, that's when he said, "What do you want to do after basketball?" And he was a teacher. He saw himself as somebody who was definitely involved in his guys' lives far beyond basketball and a towering figure in the history of the sport and obviously my alma mater for sure.
I'm so glad we were able to do both of those. Again, we talked a lot about Coach yesterday, the impact that he had on the society at large, and so to hear the impact that he had on just two individual people who you see here on Get Up every single day is really nice. Guys, thank you both for sharing those. Meanwhile, we'll take a break as we continue. Did you hear what Bill Belichick said about his new quarterback? If you haven't heard it yet, you're going to, and you're not going to believe your ears. That's coming up. And a reminder, the complete U.S. Open coverage begins at noon Eastern here on ESPN with Serena Williams on the court today looking for her 24th Grand Slam, which would tie her for the most all-time. Full day of tennis coming up here on ESPN. We are back on Get Up, and let's run the floor through the NBA's playoff games of last night. If you missed them, the Miami Heat stole game one of their series against the Bucks, winning by 11. Jimmy Butler was the star, scored 40. He's the third player in Heat history with a 40-point playoff game. LeBron and D-Wade are the others. Meanwhile, there will be a Game 7 in the series between OKC and Houston. Thunder win it last night, 104-100. Chris Paul leading the way, 28 points, 15 of those in the fourth quarter, zero turnovers for CP3. Game 7 will be tomorrow night. And Pelicans forward Brandon Ingram capped off a breakthrough season. He was the NBA's most improved player, set career highs in points, rebounds, assists, steals, and three-point percentage in his first season in New Orleans. And the NBA playoffs continue today on ESPN. 5 Eastern, we'll have NBA Countdown. That's followed by Game 2, Celtics-Raptors, 5:30 Eastern. Then it goes over to ABC for Game 7 tonight between Jamal Murray and the Nuggets, Donovan Mitchell and the Jazz. Coverage starts there with NBA Countdown, 8 Eastern. And, of course, you can see both games streaming live on the ESPN app. Speaking of the hoop, Richard Jefferson continues with me here. RJ, we talked about last night's games earlier. I want to look ahead. The Lakers and the Clippers are sitting back and waiting to see what happens. They'll both be rested and they'll be ready and waiting for these game sevens. Who do you see as the favorite in the West right now, the Lakers or the Clippers?
Shopping for Mother's Day is usually a challenge because you wait until the last minute, but Macy's Gift Finder makes it incredibly fast and easy to find the right gift just in time for Mother's Day. Whether you're shopping for your sister's first Mother's Day or your fashionista mom who loves to make a statement, Macy's Gift Finder has so many great gift ideas that you can easily pick out something special to celebrate them both. You can shop by price, anywhere from $25 and under to $100 and under. You can also sort by category like fragrance, handbags, and more, or gift lists like for the mom who has everything, pre-wrapped gifts or gifts for grandma. Find top brands like Studio Pro Model Beats headphones, Polaroid cameras, and Samsung smart TVs. So what are you waiting for? Mother's Day is May 12th. It'll be here before you know it. Macy's has the perfect gift guide to make picking something for mom easy this year. Head to Macy's.com/giftfinder today. That's Macy's.com/giftfinder. Passion, drive, and patience. The formula for winning championships is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. Superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED headlights, and more. Whether you're into speed, power, or style, eBay Motors has you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to make your car the MVP and bring home huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply. Delicious, meat nutritious. In the snack that packs a real protein punch, Wonderful Pistachios, one of the highest protein nuts out there. Each 1 ounce serving has 6 grams of protein, giving you over 10% of your daily value. Wonderful Pistachios also come in a variety of flavors and sizes, perfect for enjoying with family and friends or taking them with you on the go. And you're on the go a lot, taking the kids to school, hopping from meeting to meeting, shopping for groceries. Well, the good news is, not only are Wonderful Pistachios a complete protein, providing all 9 essential amino acids, they're also great for all your adventures. So whether you're a pistachio purist who loves cracking open every nut, or you prefer the convenience of no-shells pistachios, Wonderful Pistachios has got you covered. Grab Wonderful Pistachios and elevate your snacking game today. Visit WonderfulPistachios.com to learn more.
We all know breakfast is an important part of your day, but sometimes when you're traveling for business, you end up staying at a hotel that doesn't offer any. You know what happens? You grab a cup of coffee and skip the meal entirely. We've all been there. But if you book a room at La Quinta by Wyndham, you can enjoy their free Bright Side breakfast featuring delicious baked goods, fruit, eggs, yogurt, and waffles. And really, who doesn't want to start their day with a fresh hot waffle? Tonight, La Quinta, tomorrow you shine. Book direct at LQ.com.
Ooh, I'm still going to say the Clippers. I've said it all along. They have the most balanced team. They have the most depth of anybody in the entire NBA, and they have multiple perimeter defenders. They have multiple guys that can score buckets late. That's the issue. The one issue that I see with them is their chemistry. I think the Lakers are great. Milwaukee, obviously, I think when you look at Toronto, Boston, over there in the Eastern Conference, it gets tough. But in the Western Conference, the Clippers are still the team to beat.
Are you not concerned about the way Paul George has played? That would be the big hang-up for me here. Again, he talked openly about how the bubble, it's been a little bit difficult for him. And outside of one game in that series, he really has struggled. How concerned are you about his ability to turn it on as this thing goes forward?
Well, I'm a little concerned, but ultimately he's still one of the best defenders. So even if he's not scoring buckets, he can defend. And then look at who they have offensively to help pick up the slack if he struggles. You have Landry Shamet, you have Lou Will, you have Montrezl Harrell. You have multiple guys that pick up the slack. If LeBron or AD has an off night, who is going to pick up the slack over there? And there's not a ton of high level defenders on that perimeter side for the Lakers also. So you have no one to pick up the slack if Bron or AD has an off night, and you don't have a ton of guys that are just locked down defenders. Well, the Clippers have multiple guys that can step up and have played semi-consistent basketball over the course of this bubble.
All right, I get that. And so You bring up LeBron and AD. The reason I don't worry about them is because I agree with Kendrick Perkins. And let me show you the poll question that I have up there today. And I give all the credit in the world to Big Perk. He's the one who tweeted that LeBron and AD are the best duo in the NBA since Shaq and Kobe. And so I've turned it into a poll question today. Since Shaq and Kobe, you can vote at ESPN Greeny on Twitter. What is the NBA's best duo? Is it LeBron and AD? Is it KD and Steph? Is it LeBron and Kyrie? You were a teammate of theirs, RJ. How about LeBron and D-Wade in Miami? What do you think? What's the NBA's best duo since Shaq and Kobe, who you, of course, played against in the finals?
Well, again, it's tough because we're looking at this pre what these guys have finished off a season before that month. If you have to ask, like, it's got to be KD and Steph, if you ask me. They've won two championships. Kevin Durant won two finals MVPs over the course of that time. They dominated the postseason over that course. So if you're looking at just what has been accomplished since Shaq and Kobe, it's those two. But looking forward to the future, if they win a championship, if they're able to win multiple championships, that pairing, they're the most talented pairing that we have seen, but they still haven't accomplished anything. And I'm not crowning any player until they accomplish something.
All right, that's fair. Meanwhile, there is one other thing I wanted to give you an opportunity to talk about here, and that is that your former head coach at Arizona, Lute Olson, passed away. We showed your post from the day after his passing. I know how much it meant to you, and I'd love you to share some thoughts about that here this morning as well.
Oh, well, thanks, Greeny. You know, it's tough because Lute Olson was such a leader of men. And you look at the golden era of college basketball and John Thompson, it's like we haven't gotten a break really over the last couple of weeks. And John Thompson, Lute Olson, and if you're a West Coast kid, if you grew up watching West Coast basketball, it was John Wooden in the 70s. And then you had, you know, in my opinion, I think it was really Lute Olson. Those were the two schools. You looked at UCLA and you looked at Arizona. He started a program from nothing and led them to 23 straight conference or NCAA tournaments. And that's just him as a player. I had the opportunity to speak at his wife's funeral. And when you talk about the impact he had in the Tucson community and, you know, having players, well, MLK on our coats, because Arizona was the last one to have MLK as a national holiday. Lute Olson was doing this in the 90s. He was an advocate for equal rights in the 90s and representing the state of Arizona as the state highest paid employee. So even if we look at now today, talking about politics and sports, he was doing this 30 years ago before you would ever do something like that. And I think when you look at where we are today and you look at where he was 30 years ago, it lets you know that the type of man he was and the type of leader he was.
It's a side of him that perhaps not nearly as well known. I'm glad you were able to share that. And certainly our condolences continue to you, to all of his players, and to all of his family and friends. Meanwhile, I'll get back to the NFL here on Get Up on ESPN. And with less than 2 weeks before the start of the season, as of now, Cam Newton and Jarrett Stidham remain listed as co-starters on the Patriots' depth chart. But in an interview with SiriusXM's NFL Radio, Bill Belichick gave a 2-minute-and-41-second answer about Cam so far.
He's an extremely hard worker. Nobody works harder than Cam does. He's here early. He stays late. He's got a great personality. He gets along with everybody. And he's highly competitive. He's very, very competitive on the field. He always wants to do his best and do better than the guys competing against. And you know, you see that from everybody's competitive, but I think there are different degrees of it. And, you know, it looks like I would, based on what I've seen, I would put him in the top echelon of that. But those are some of the things that have you know, jumped out, you know, in the month or so that we've been here, you know, in person.
That was part of a 2-minute-and-41-second answer in which he just threw roses at Cam Newton, and in particular, his competitiveness. And that's all well and good, with the exception of the facts that, A, this is Bill Belichick, who generally doesn't spend 2 minutes and 41 seconds combined talking about anything, and the fact that if I'm Tom Brady listening to that, I would give anything to have seen Tom Brady's face as he listened to that response. Jeff Saturday, what do you think?
You know how a little bit ago we talked about Aaron Rodgers playing with a chip on his shoulder because everybody wanted to replace him? This is going to be like the Tom Brady chip, right? Bill Belichick just gave the Buccaneers the greatest gift he could give them. Because in 20 years, you might be able to combine 2 minutes and 41 seconds of Belichick talking about Brady and his competitiveness. A guy's been there a month, and you're already getting it. You couldn't – if you're Bruce Arians, man, you just – all you do is just keep that on – you just keep replaying that for Brady. Every Monday morning, just keep giving it to him because it's unbelievable. And listen, I respect Cam Newton. I love what Belichick said about him. But, man, I'm with you. I am floored that he spent 2 minutes and 41 seconds on a guy who's been there, you know, 31 days.
Yeah, and I also don't believe that Bill Belichick ever does anything by accident. So I find it fascinating that he chose to do that and exactly his intention. I suppose I don't know. Marcus, what'd you think of it?
His intention is to let his starting quarterback know that I'm with you. And I'm going to let you be yourself. Come on, guys. This ain't rocket science. We know what Bill Belichick is doing. He's using a coaching tactic. He's giving his quarterback, who's going to have to lead this offense, all of the confidence that he needs going into this season. And look, this is what it boils down to. The fact that Bill Belichick will go on this rant, especially when it's not talking about either Lawrence Taylor or Ed Reed, because we all know if you mention those two names to him, he can go for hours. This is about his relationship with Cam Newton and making sure Cam feels the support of the most important person in that organization, and that's Bill Belichick. I think it's great use of a coaching tactic. And look, the number one thing that I've talked to guys about, Willie McGinnis, I've talked to Richard Seymour, I've seen these guys at volleyball tournaments all over the place. The one common denominator they've always said is Belichick respects the work. If you work, you'll be fine with Bill Belichick. And Cam, for all intents and purposes throughout his whole career, has been known as a guy that's going to put the work in order to have success. So I think a big part of that is him respecting the fact of how Cam is going about doing his job. And the second part is making sure the starter for the New England Patriots is going to know he has the full confidence of his head coach when the season starts.
I'm good with all of that. My sense, however, is that Tom Brady also tended to work hard. And when Bill Belichick spoke about
him. Gee, who cares?
But you couldn't hear him. When Belichick talked about Brady, he did it so softly, you couldn't hear him. And now he just spent 2 minutes and 41 seconds waxing poetic about Cam Newton. You don't find that at all unusual?
Man, listen. They don't have no love for each other. We've been saying this, right? We've been saying that these guys got along so they could get along and win and have success. That's what winning does. It will mask a lot of things. But are you crazy if you've watched Bill Belichick and Tom Brady in all of this departure think that everything is peaches and cream between both of those guys? They don't rock with each other. That's what it boiled down to. Bill got his new guy, Cam. He lauded him. He loved him. He want to respect him. He want him to go out and play well. And Tom gone. So both of them got what they want. Stop all of this where he doing this. Man, they don't like each other. That's what it boiled down to.
Listen, now we're talking. Dan Graziano, what do you think?
We spent so much time talking about Tom Brady will loosen up and show more of his personality now that he's not with Belichick. Maybe we had it the wrong way around. Maybe Belichick's loosening up and showing more of his personality now that Tom's not. Look, I mean, he's a coach, right? And when you're coaching, you've got to know your guys. And it may well be that Bill Belichick saw Tom Brady as someone who is better motivated with a chip on his shoulder, better motivated wondering if the head coach thinks you're great as opposed to hearing it, whereas Cam Newton might be a different kind of person. So that's what I could come up with. The only other thing I thought I had was, you know, because you said, Greeny, he does nothing by accident. The only other thought I had was, like, this is the kind of thing you say if you're going to trade a guy, right? You're trying to talk him up. So it's very strong here, but I think it's probably more about what Marcus is saying about letting Cam Newton know that you've got him.
All right, how good do we think these guys are going to be? We're going to find out as we continue, because coming up, all of our analysts are going to put together their 2020 NFL bold predictions, including one about Aaron Rodgers that I guarantee you is going to get everyone's attention. That is on the way. And a reminder, complete U.S. Open coverage begins at noon Eastern. Here on ESPN, you will see Serena Williams, among others, on the court. That's today, right here on ESPN. Back on Get Up and Let's Get Up and Go around the news from the sports world yesterday. The NFL is now overseeing the investigation into allegations of sexual harassment within the Washington football team. Team owner Dan Snyder says he asked Commissioner Roger Goodell to take it over. Elsewhere, Nick Saban led his football players and other Alabama athletes in a march through Tuscaloosa called the March for Change. They were protesting recent incidents of police brutality against black men and women. Here's Coach Saban.
So, you know, today I'm like a proud parent. I'm proud of our team. I'm proud of our messengers over here, and I'm very proud of the message.
In other news, in a response to a lawsuit filed by Nebraska football players, the Big Ten revealed its presidents and chancellors voted 11-3 last month to postpone the fall season. Ohio State, Iowa, and Nebraska are the three who voted to play. And the U.S. Open just underway, and Coco Gauff is out on day one, losing yesterday in a great match to Anastasia Sevastova, 6-3, 5-7, 6-4. It's Gauff's earliest exit from a Grand Slam in her four appearances. Meanwhile, we are 9 days until the kickoff of the NFL season. Ready or not, they start a week from Thursday night. And so we have asked all of our analysts this morning to put together bold predictions for the upcoming season. Swagoo is excited. I know what his is. He should be. But we will start with Greg. Greg McElroy, what is your bold prediction?
Matthew Stafford will win Comeback Player of the Year, and I think we'll have his best season of his career. It was off to a great start last year when the back injury sidelined him in week 9. Remember last year, guys, they were 3-4-1 with Stafford in the starting lineup, and then when he went out of the lineup, the Lions went 0-8. So I expect Stafford to have an incredible year this upcoming year, and it'll probably be his best self as he heads into what should be a make-or-break 2021 campaign with the Detroit Lions.
I said it multiple times last year. Stafford was a sneaky MVP candidate in the early part of last season. All right, Graziano, bold prediction.
Odell Beckham Jr. leads the league in receiving yards this year. I think it's a huge bounce back both for him and the Browns, a player and a team that we were all incredibly excited about this time last year. Obviously, we know how it went. But I think people are forgetting about this team and this player and how good he is especially.
I think that's a good one. I think also people don't realize his numbers last year weren't as bad as the perception generally was. He just hasn't caught a lot of touchdowns, but he had more catches. Out of over 1,000 yards. His numbers haven't been quite as bad. I like that one. All right, Jeff Saturday, bold prediction.
Pittsburgh Steelers win the AFC North. Hey, listen, you talk about the Steelers and Ben Roethlisberger's 110-10 when his team scores 20 points. You know how many the defense gave up last year? 19 points a game. That's a pretty good defense. They were 8-3 last year, Greeny, when they scored 10 points. If you think Roethlisberger coming back isn't going to help this football team, this is going to be a major contender in the AFC if Roethlisberger stays healthy.
Ooh, I like that one. I want to stop down on this. Swagoo, I'm going to save yours for a minute, but let me ask you to react to that. He's saying Steelers win the AFC North, not the Ravens. Marcus Spears, what do you think of that?
Man, I want to fight Jeff, but he made a great point. I still think it's Baltimore's division. I like what Lamar is doing. Greg Roman to have some little nuances, and they'll still play at a high level of defense. But 8-3 when they score 10 points is a major argument. Gee, it's hard for me to fight through that brick wall, and you know I like doing it. But Jeff makes a great point that Ben is at least good for a touchdown and a field goal.
They were 30th out of 32 teams in QBR last year, and they still won half their games. Mike Tomlin should have been the coach of the year based on that alone. Quickly, Greg McElroy, the injury that he's coming back from, that Ben is coming back from, the elbow surgery. You're a thrower of the football. How do you expect him? Sometimes a pitcher will come back better than he was before. Is that going to be the case for Roethlisberger?
No, I think we can all hope. I think the elusiveness, and obviously he's still going to be very accurate and the arm's still going to be big. I mean, he's going to have plenty of juice on the football, but developing the consistency, I think, is probably something that was challenging throughout the course of this offseason. But I expect him to play really well this year and at least, at the very least, be significantly, in fact, exponentially better than what they got from the quarterback spot with him out of the lineup last year.
All right, that's fair. Finally, Marcus, we saved you the stage. What is your bold prediction?
My bold prediction is Aaron Rodgers will play his last season in Green Bay this year. I think he's going to force their hands to get out of there. And I don't want to hear it, Graz. I know how much money they owe him. I know it's a cap situation, and I know all of that. My point is, coming from Aaron Rodgers, watching him watch Jordan Love get drafted, surrounding him with no weapons, just feels to me he's ready to start writing the second part of his career, as crazy as that sounds. So my bold prediction is Aaron Rodgers and this team is going to try to get out of Green Bay, and it could potentially happen because somebody will give up a lot to get him.
Okay, so not only do I love the prediction, but I love the peremptory strike at Graziano before he even gets to point out. Dan, go ahead.
I know the numbers was coming.
Just how much money we'd be talking about at Green Bay.
I don't have any time for your facts and math and all those stuff. Who needs all that? This is just how I feel. Look, I'll tell you this. I think Green Bay's plan is two more years of Aaron Rodgers, and that assumes Jordan Love develops the way they hope he does and assumes that, you know, Aaron Rodgers doesn't win the next two Super Bowls. Obviously, things can change. But I think the way the Packers are looking at it is Jordan Love becomes a starter in 2022. But yeah, I mean, Marcus is right. We've seen players force their way out of town, and if things go badly there, it absolutely could be possible.
Yeah, look, because that's Green Bay's plan. That doesn't mean, Jeff Saturday, that it's Aaron Rodgers' plan. And Aaron Rodgers, I'm with Swagoo. I think it's likelier that he plays great and forces his way out than it is that he plays badly and Love isn't developing at the rate that they want, and they decide to do a second season there. You know him a little bit, Jeff. What do you think?
Yeah, I think it would make him feel really good about himself if he could keep Jordan Love on the bench for the next few years. So I think this guy would love to prove everybody wrong. I think he goes out and play and balls out, in all honesty, and just lets it rip this season and next season. I kind of fall in love with Dan's numbers. When you're talking about the Green Bay Packers eating that type of number, it would be tough for me to see it. We have seen it happen, but I think Aaron Rodgers plays out of his mind this year, and I think it encourages the Packers or forces them to keep him playing and starting.
Wait.
Go ahead, Marcus.
Jeff, that ain't what we asking you. We ain't asking you if he's going to play out his mind. Aaron Rodgers, they say Aaron Rodgers had a down year last year with 4,000 yards and 26 touchdowns. Aaron Rodgers going to ball out. The point that we're making is Aaron Rodgers going through this process with Green Bay, I think in the back of his mind, he like, yo, I need to get out of here. I'm going to go somewhere else where I got some weapons and win a Super Bowl. We didn't think Tom Brady was leaving New England either. So we've seen things happen. I believe Aaron Rodgers sits there this year, balls out of his mind to your point, Jeff Saturday, and at the end of it says, okay, I want to go somewhere and win some Super Bowls somewhere else since y'all don't seem to respect me like I should be respected.
I kind of like that. I see it the way you see it. I also see a scenario where they come back apologetic to him and he winds up finishing his career there because they realize that trying to move on from him is maybe the most ridiculous idea any team has had in a long time. First Take is coming up next year. They'll talk about a lot of things. Max and Stephen A. Will debate who was to blame for the Rockets' failures last night in the bubble, among many other things. That is First Take, and they're coming your way in 5 minutes. And then following First Take, it's the U.S. Open here on ESPN. And among those on the court today, the great Serena Williams looking for her record-tying 24th Grand Slam. That's later today, right here on ESPN. Get Up is brought to you by Snickers. Maybe you just need a Snickers. It's been an interesting morning here, no question about it, and I'll have a lot to say about it all when I join you coast to coast on ESPN Radio starting at noon Eastern time. So I will see you then. Stephen A. and Max are standing by. First Take is next, followed by U.S. Open Tennis. Have a great day, everybody, here on ESPN.
10 seconds on the clock. How many things can you name that are always growing? Your relationships. Your skills, your customer base. How about businesses on Shopify? Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify's there to help you grow. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/network, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/network now to grow your business. No matter what stage you're in, shopify.com/network.